This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Yes, I am here. Welcome, everybody. How are you today? Special shout out to those folks at Lovingston's 94.7 for being with us. And I also need to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for letting us even be on air today. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, where you are encouraged to be kind and have fun and always do the right thing. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is at Barracks Road here in Charlottesville. They have three Richmond locations. Online for more store information, it's brms.com. All right, our topic today, schools, local schools. And how are you, ma'am?
Good afternoon or good morning, Rick.
That's right, it's still good morning.
It is morning.
Our guest at the moment today, Dr. Rosa Atkins from Charlottesville City School System, the superintendent. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Rick, for having me.
And we are painfully waiting Dr. Pam Moran to join us as well. Dr. Atkins, for some reason, doesn't believe that she can fill the hour of conversation. I have full faith.
Thanks, Rick, for having faith in me.
I don't know why. You are the leader of the school system. I come from a family of teachers. I have full faith in the superintendent at all times.
Okay, we can talk, and we can talk quite a while sometimes.
We only need to do it for 59 more minutes. See, you're already 60 seconds through the program.
Great.
Again, Dr. Rosa Atkins with us today as we talk about school system locally. There are a few topics, such as the No Child Left Behind Act, which start at a federal level and come down to the regional and local and state system that we'll be getting into. Please write down the phone number if you have a question. We'll take some calls in a little bit. 979-0919. WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number. That's 877 WNRN Rocks is toll-free, 979-0919, the local question phone number line. All right, Dr. Atkins, Dr. Rosa Atkins here from the city of Charlottesville and the school superintendent. Let's just jump right into it. The big news breaker that I've seen in the last few weeks has been about the No Child Left Behind Act. I was really surprised, and I don't know if I have the proper number here, 158 of 162 school systems in the state of Virginia did not meet the requirements to pass the No Child Left Behind Act, or whatever that proper way to put that is, the logo, the jargon. Tell me more about that. How does that happen?
No, Rick, I think many of us in education and communities realized many years ago when the No Child Left Behind guidelines were announced and the accountability measures put in place that it was not necessarily about a whole school division, but about each individual child, and that we were charged with and responsible for, and rightfully so, to educate each individual child. So the premise behind No Child Left Behind was absolutely accurate. However, to measure a school division as failing or succeeding based on one measure at a given point in time, we knew several years ago that as the benchmarks continue to increase, that it would cause difficulty for school divisions and for communities. And I think that's what we're seeing.
You talk about how the benchmarks have increased. Can you tell me in what way the benchmarks have increased? What am I visualizing? What is written down on the piece of paper as to what that says?
That's a good question. Benchmarks are the percentage of students who are expected to show mastery on the test, the accountability test. Those benchmarks started out around 70% of the students.
That's the SOL test that we hear about every year?
Correct, the SOL test.
So the number of students who pass the SOL test is increasing.
increasing each year.
Or required to increase.
Increasing and headed towards 100% in 2014. The expectation is that in 2014, 100% of the students in school divisions across our nation will show mastery on the accountability test.
And we're 10 years into this program, correct?
We are.
So 10 years ago, whatever the numbers started at, it could have been 20%, it could have been 98% for some school systems. But now, 10 years into the program, everybody, federally, right, nationally, is expected to reach what percent this year?
This year, it's 85%.
That's a lot.
And 86. So it's 85% of the students should reach mastery in mathematics, and 86% of the students in reading.
But one of the first comments that you made was that that's, if I remember, I don't want to put words in your mouth, especially not a public figure such as a superintendent, but what I caught there was that's difficult, and I don't know that that's going to happen for everybody.
I think we need to examine why it's difficult. I think the premise of making sure that each student achieve mastery is accurate. We should do that. That's the responsibility of a school system. That's the responsibility of teaching and learning. However, we have to take into consideration that when students enter the public school system, they don't all enter at the same place. We know from all of the research that has talked about how students learn, the students don't all learn at the same rate and master content at the same rate. So the accountability measure, the No Child Left Behind requirement, is that we assume that every student who enters, enters at the same place, and that all students will master the content at the same rate. So when we administer the assessment, all students should show mastery at the same time.
So 10 years ago, the goal was 70%?
We started off at 70%.
That's what Charlottesville started at, or that's what the requirement or acceptance level was?
Well, that's our State Department of Education. Our State Department of Education set the benchmarks in the quest for the 2014 requirement. So different states set different percentages of students mastering the test. Our State Department started at about 70% of the students mastering the content, and it has increased approximately 4 percentage points each year.
So we are talking about the No Child Left Behind Act and schools and issues regarding local schools in general. Our guest, City of Charlottesville Superintendent Dr. Rosa Atkins. Dr. Atkins, so in 10 years, the goal has been to increase 15%, and in 4 more years, we're supposed to increase 15%, right?
Correct. Do the math.
Yeah, that sounds challenging. But the news that's happened here in 2011, that I don't know if my numbers are correct, but something like 158 of 162 school systems have not met those goals.
And to concentrate on the school divisions that have not met the goal, I think would be missing the point. It is all about individual students. The work that teachers do in the classroom on a day-to-day basis is to educate each individual child. So when we look at the school division and we say that the school division has not made it, that causes us to lose sight of what is happening in the classroom. There are many, many students in our classrooms who are making it. And that teaching and learning that is going on in the classroom has made a huge difference in the lives of those students, and that we have to stay focused on. No matter what percentage of divisions make it, it's all about individual students.
Does it only take that one student to cause the school or the division to not meet the goal? Do you have to have 100%?
That's true. There are 27 data points that an individual school must meet in order to be considered making adequate yearly progress, or AYP. If a school division misses one data point, then that school division is determined to have not made adequate yearly progress, or AYP, and that school division is determined to be a failing school or school division.
So is there anything involved with the No Child Left Behind that assists, suggests what the school division should do, or efforts that can be made to help the specific child or children who have yet to do so, whether it's because the way it comes across through the media is that you don't have good students, or excuse me, you don't have good teachers. Not that you're missing specific struggling children who need special care for whatever reason, whether it's learning skills or issues outside of the school, at home, or et cetera. Does anything in the No Child Left Behind Act focus on this individual student that you've referred to?
Well, there's nothing that takes into consideration the point where the student is when they enter the school system, enter kindergarten or enter any of the grade levels. And that's a critical point, that when students enter schools, our teachers have been trained and are equipped to take them from where they are and move them forward. When a student enters a classroom and a student is 2 or 3 years behind in developmental skills or academic skills, and a teacher teaches that student and responds to their individual need and moves that student 2 grade levels in 1 year, it's an incredible feat for the teacher. That is, by all measures, success. However, if that student needed to move 2.5 years, and they are administered the SOL test at the end of the year, and they don't pass, that one test takes out everything that teacher has done as far as reporting is concerned, and considers all of those efforts to be unsuccessful, as it's reported in the media and as it's viewed by the federal government. I tend to say that's an inaccurate view of the success that teacher has had in the classroom.
So, as a single superintendent in one of the school divisions in the state of Virginia, one of 50 states, where do we go to change the goals, or to change how the goals are considered successful, so that this doesn't happen? When you see the headline in our local newspaper, and then what I call the first paragraph readers, the folks whose effort of reading the newspaper article is to read the first paragraph and skip the remaining 12 or 22, that's how it comes across as being unsuccessful. What do we need to do to take into account the students who have had great success but just not enough for the marks that need to be made?
There's a new accountability measure that will be reported this fall, and it's going to be called the Student Growth Measure. Now, I am not so quick to jump on the Student Growth Measure to say that's going to be the answer to accurately reporting how our students progress from year to year. But the measure will be reported from our State Department of Education, the Virginia State Department of Education, and it will compare students to like groups. Say, for instance, a student who last year in the third grade scored 96 on the SOL test. They will be grouped with other students who were in the third grade at that time and made a 96. When that student moves on to fourth grade and takes the SOL test in fourth grade, that cohort of students from across our state will then be compared. And the amount of growth from the performance in third grade to the performance in fourth grade will be calculated and a student growth measure percentile will be reported. That is to show us the growth of the student academically over a year, and over a period of time will show us trend data in that growth. That's intended to help us measure better measure the how students grow from year to year. I don't know that that's the answer to determining growth based on a single metric to use trend data. We have to see that data and see the interpretation of the data, of those data, before I draw a conclusion that that's the answer. I think what we have to do as a community is to be actively involved in our schools, to go into the classrooms, to see the kind of teaching and learning that's going on in the classrooms. Even if you don't have a student in our schools, come into the school division. Come into the schools and see and talk with teachers. Look at the kind of teaching that's going on. Then when the accountability measures and the reports come out, you have firsthand knowledge of the teaching and learning and the growth that's happening in the classroom. So when you read the headlines, you're not misled by a term, a school division fails. That's a pretty powerful statement. But if you have firsthand knowledge about what's going on in that classroom, you have a better understanding of what that means, and you would not interpret it as unsuccessful.
11:16 here on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, City of Charlottesville School Superintendent Dr. Rosa Atkins, talking about school issues in general. Feel free to call us up if you have a question. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number for those a little further out of the area. Let me thank those who are listening and get you to learn more about vehicles for charity. If you want to get rid of an old vehicle but don't want to deal with selling it or fixing it or junking it, you can consider donating it to WNRN. The donation process is simple. You get rid of your unwanted vehicle, qualify for a tax deduction, and support the program you rely on. You can find out more about donating your car, motorcycle, or RV, whether it runs or not, at wnrn.org/donateyourcar. All right, back with our guest today, Dr. Rosa Atkins. We're talking about the No Child Left Behind Act and how to determine whether the school division is successful beyond what the headline says. Or you said there are 27
data points.
27 data points, and
yes,
you have to meet 100% of your students have to meet 100% of the data points to be considered successful.
That's correct.
That does sound kind of hard. But there are, to visit the school system, there are how many teachers in the Charlottesville schools?
We have about 400 teachers in our school division.
And so, as a superintendent, I throw this trick question at you, which is, are 400 of your teachers successful?
That is a trick question, Rick.
I come from a family of teachers, none of them in the Charlottesville or Albemarle school system, but I've listened to them talk about the workplace, their school systems, and am led to believe that while 399 teachers might be successful in their school divisions, that it's just as difficult to have 100% of successful teachers as it is of a challenge to have 100% of students on all data points.
I think we're very fortunate in our school divisions, be it Charlottesville or other school divisions, that the learning process for a teacher doesn't stop when they leave the university or the teacher preparation programs and come into our school divisions. They don't stop learning. From the time they come into our school division and throughout their professional career, there are always opportunities and requirements that they participate in professional development that help them to use research in their classrooms to incorporate it in their teaching, the methods that they use, the strategies that they use in order to teach students. So that professional development is ongoing, very, very active, and very much tied with the day-to-day teaching and learning. We also have an evaluation process in which we evaluate teachers and all employees in the school system. We give them useful feedback, honest feedback on how they're teaching and how that teaching relates to the achievement of their students, and not just on SOL testing, but how it relates to the achievement of students progressing from one grade level to another. So we have several mechanisms by which we engage with teachers, we support them, we give them feedback to ensure their success in the classroom.
Good answer on the trick question.
Thank you.
11:20 here in the wake-up call with Dr. Rosa Atkins. I'm going to get into more things. We'll leave the No Child Left Behind Act for a little bit. 11:20, if you'd like to call up, 979-0919. You can also send us an instant message at WNRN Studio on the AOL site. Markets of Togrefeu forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. There's a flash flood watch throughout the evening over in the valley, with showers and thunderstorms today. Highs 80 to 85. Cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. Lows in the low 60. Cloudy and showers and thunderstorms tomorrow as well. Highs 80 to 85 and a little cooler in the valley. Right now, it's a nice sunny day out there. 72 in the valley, 78 in Lynchburg, 73 in Richmond, 77 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Togrefeu, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support today also coming from L. Oppelman's Pawn Shop, serving Lynchburg families for over a century at 909 Main Street. L. Oppelman always has a selection of affordable jewelry, including estate jewelry and hand-picked GIA-certified diamonds, loose or mounted, plus gold and platinum wedding bands. L. Oppelman also has cultured pearls and watches from brands like Rolex and Tag. That's L. Oppelman, 909 Main Street in Lynchburg. And you know what? I also need to thank those of you listening and supporting us. We couldn't bring you the music you love and the support of listeners like Shane Harrison, Matt Hodges, and Pete Lorenzoni, who donated to the most recent fund drive back in the spring, or businesses like Main Street Arena and Wine Warehouse, who underwrite the programming that you rely on. If you appreciate WNRN's contributions to your life, then show your support by calling into the next phone drive coming in at the end of September, or anytime at WNRN.org. All right, back with our guest today, Dr. Rosa Atkins from the Charlottesville school system. Dr. Atkins, let's get into something less pressing, I hope. Charlottesville's talking about how to get every student some sort of tablet computer, correct?
Correct, yes.
Talk more about that, because I think there are some questions about how to make it work in the best way, but what brought the process to be, you know, who thought about it, and how's it going?
Rick, that's a great question, and I'd like to start off with No Child Left Behind, actually. No Child Left Behind measures student learning at an application level. They are taught skills. It's a multiple choice test in which students eliminate and select answers. That's a relatively low level of expectation for our students. As we went into the development of our strategic plan and started looking at our next cycle of textbook adoptions, we realized that there was an opportunity for us to open up our thinking and how we teach students, moving away from just the expectation of multiple choice and moving our teaching and learning to an area in which we engage students in problems. We facilitate their learning and give them an opportunity to dig deep into subject matters and to have deep learning, deep, meaningful learning. With that discussion, we made the decision, instead of investing our funds in the purchase of printed textbooks, we would redirect some of those funds to the purchase and of tools that would give us access, give our students and teachers access to the internet throughout the day, so that they, our students, could engage in that rich, deep probing of questions and subject matter.
All right, so every student, well, that's not quite true. You're not giving them to elementary school students, correct?
We are not. It will be grades 6 through 12.
Okay, so you have six grades of students throughout the city of Charlottesville getting tablets. Would this be done all at one time? Would this be, would everyone get the same system? Would they all be Windows, or would they all be Macintosh?
Well, all students will not receive their tablets at the same time. We have a rolling phase-in process that we will undertake at the beginning of the school year. The first group of students will be our high school students, who will receive their tablets sometime late September, the 1st of October. There's a series of professional development that our teachers have been engaged in during the summer and will continue to be engaged in as we move into the week before students return. Students then will be engaged in professional development to help them know how to use the tools that they will receive and how they can access information with the tools. Many of them are much more well-versed in using technology than some of the adults in our environment. And we will have professional development for our parents to so that our parents will know what to expect. Then we will start the rollout of the tablet computers to our students. And we will phase it in so that we make sure that as any issues develop, should they develop with hardware, with the infrastructure, that we have an opportunity to respond to any of those issues and get those taken care of before we have everyone having the tablets.
You mentioned rolling them in. How are you talking about that? Are you talking about like grades 10, 11, and 12 get them 1 year, and then it's the next year that other grades get them?
Well, no, we won't have a year in between when students get them. One grade level will get them, and a few weeks later, the next grade level. All students will have their tablets by the end of December. So starting in October, our ninth graders will receive their tablets. We will let them have them for a few weeks. Then we will go to 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, and then down into the middle school.
Is there any concern about them all going out of date in the same year and having to? How much money is being spent on this? And then in however many years that the tablets are good for, 4 years, 6 years, that you have to replace all of them at one time?
We have a four-year contract, and we are under a lease with our computers, so that at the end of a four-year period, we can either continue to use the tablets that we have, or we can make a decision to upgrade those tablets. So it gives us maximum flexibility with the lease option rather than purchasing the computers. We can continue the relationship with the company that we start with and either upgrade or continue using the tablets that we have.
Are they all going to be Windows? Are there some Macintosh so that the students get a little flexibility on what they learn?
That's a good question. It's dual platform, that students can go back and forth. Teachers, we have given our teachers iPads, and all of our teachers in grades 6 through 12 receive the iPads during the summer. And those iPads are dual-platform iPads. And when the students come in, they will have a similar flexibility.
All right, 11:29 on the wake-up call with our guest today, Dr. Rosa Atkins. She's the superintendent from the city of Charlottesville. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for letting us be here today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, also promotional items for schools like Dr. Atkins, as well as organizations and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, online, brgtshirts.com. All right, Doc Atkins, we did get a phone call. You are welcome to call in, by the way. Send us an instant message. That's 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is toll-free. WNRN Studio at AOL is the instant message. Stuart called us from Troy. Is the goal of the public schools to get students to pass the No Child Left Behind or to reach other educational objectives?
That's
another trick question.
That's a wonderful question. In our school division, we realize that around us globally, our world is changing, and how our businesses, corporations, and society conduct business has changed tremendously since the time that No Child Left Behind came into vogue. Getting students ready to be successful in a global society is absolutely the goal of a school division. It's not about one measure, one accountability test. It's about making sure that students can interact with colleagues who are in school with them, their immediate neighbors, or their neighbors who are across the ocean, and that they can problem solve, they can work collaboratively in groups, they can work collaboratively in a digital world, that they are prepared to be the leaders of tomorrow because of what we're doing with them today in our classrooms.
But you hear many students, excuse me, you hear many teachers, typically anonymously, say, we're just teaching to pass the test. That's really the expectation, probably not from the Charlottesville school system, but that is a comment that I've heard made by many teachers, is that instead of teaching the student and finding unique topics or unique methods that really, you need to teach the kids the answers to the tests.
Well, you know, Rick, I think all of the attention that No Child Left Behind is getting now is going to help us move from that kind of temperament with teachers well beyond it. When your federal government, your state government, and your local school division have mandates that unless you pass a specific test or students pass a specific test, you can be called a failure in your local newspaper, that your federal and state funding can be impacted, that there are all kinds of sanctions that can be required in the school division and implemented. When those kinds of pressures are put on professionals, educators, principals, teachers, it will cause teachers and educators across the board to feel as if our country has gone to a single focus, and that's a test. The attention that No Child Left Behind now is getting is really shedding light on the detriment that it has caused in some ways to the profession, to the education profession, and how boxed in teachers and educators have felt over the past few years. Hopefully, this attention will wake up not only our federal government, but our state officials to say, enough is enough. Let's now move to the kind of teaching and learning and education that we know will make our students college and workforce ready when they leave our high schools and they enter into post-secondary education.
I see that the phone has dialed up. So let me ask you a question that's probably not quick. Well, you talk about pressures on the school systems and pressures on the teachers with the No Child Left Behind Act. What about the pressures on the school superintendent when, again, from the city of Charlottesville, Dr. Rosa Atkins, when you have at least two, if not three, school board members running for city council, and I believe three or four positions available on the school board for this upcoming election? You can't possibly just sort of turn your back to it.
You can't turn your... We are very fortunate that in Charlottesville, we have school board members that are well-informed. They attend workshops regularly throughout the school year so that they can stay updated on current issues and current trends. Very recently, several of our school board members attended the Governor's Conference, which was held in Richmond, which showcased best practices throughout our industry. So those board members who are remaining on our board and those who will be running for city council, they are well informed. So they can speak very fluently on the benefits of No Child Left Behind, but also the detriment that those particular accountability measures have had on our classrooms.
Caller, hang on for just a second. But Dr. Atkins, let's remove the No Child Left Behind from it for a moment. And you have three school board members who you've worked with now moving to city council, possibly, and you have four new school board members. How do you do your job with, A, the change that may be happening, and the change from someone who now may be on city council, say, hey, Rose, how you doing? Don't forget I got you that job.
Well, one of the things that I think this community can certainly use as a badge of honor is the relationship between city council and our school board. From the first day that I entered the school division as superintendent, it was apparent to me that from the mayor to each individual city council person, that they are very interested in the success of our school division. And they're very interested in working with, partnering with our school board members and our school to make sure that we have a successful school. So to have two school board members to run for city council and potentially be on city council, I think is a win for our school division. It is an opportunity for us to continue to strengthen and solidify that relationship. Other members of the community who are running for city council, I've heard them also articulate their interest and commitment to our school division. None of that is going to change. That will get even stronger, I think, as time goes on.
All right, let's take our call. Dun-ta-da. Scott, are you with us?
I am.
Hi, we have Scott from Charlottesville. Fire away, sir.
Okay, so I guess my question and comment are that it seems my impression, and I'm open to correction, is that the school system starts as a default that everyone is headed to college. And then at some point, fairly late in the process, there may be some recognition that education may be targeted elsewhere, but it has always seemed like a little bit of an add-on system, unlike in, say, a lot of European countries. Is that impression correct? And if so, do you think that there is a need for a sort of development and a beefing up of a system that deals more with jobs and trades and so forth?
I think there was a time in which we thought that those two avenues, the career and technical education avenue, was mutually exclusive from the college preparatory avenue. In the educational arena, we don't see those as mutually exclusive, that you have to have one or the other. Students who desire not to go on to a 2 or 4 year institution also need to be well prepared and have the skills that are necessary to be successful in college to go into a technical area or a technical school or enter the workforce. Being ready for society requires the same level of skill development as it does to enter college and to be successful in college. We may find students who plan not to go off to college will not take as many math courses, but there is a foundational level of math that each student must take in order to be prepared for society. So it is our intention that we will educate each student to, at a minimum, college readiness. That's our goal. I don't think we should ever turn away from that goal, but also give students the flexibility to make a decision as to which route they want to go, whether they will actually continue on to college or go into some technical area or vocational area or even the workforce.
Thanks, Scott. Good question. I appreciate the call. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Our guest today, Dr. Rosa Atkins, superintendent from the Charlottesville City Schools. It's 1140 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
And from the Today Show to the White House, there's no predicting where Waldo Jakewood will pop up next. Although I say look on the cover of this week's Hook. Get to know the man anointed an Obama administration champion of change. And at least one Charlottesville citizen says Councilor Hooja should pay for a translator to be better understood by the public. And Roger Ebert reviews the change-up, the Hook, lush and relaxing. And support today is coming from Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce your household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep the planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. So you can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Call them 978-2111. Find them online, DixonDisposal.com. All right, back with our guest today, Dr. Rosa Atkins from Charlottesville City School. She's the superintendent over there. Call up and ask her a question if you have questions or things you need to know about the school systems in general or specific to the Charlottesville scene. Dr. Atkins, doing my homework for today's program, I know that there are some questions about redistricting here in the Charlottesville area and not having a student. I know that there's the middle schools, the whatever. But I went back and I found something from 2009 about gender diverse schools. I'd like to know your thoughts about having all male public school, all female public school, and why.
Rick, that's a great question. We are not in the process of rezoning any of our schools. We have gone through a conversation about the renovation of Beaufort to make Beaufort a 6-8 middle school. And during that discussion with our community, the subject of same gender classes or schools did come up. One of our community members expressed a real interest in having same gender classes. We looked at state code and helped our community to understand that that is a possibility for discussion in our community. However, we have to make sure that if we offer same gender classes, that we also must offer multiple gender classes also. We can't have one without the other. So that is something as we talk about how our middle school will be configured within the building, how we set up each grade level, and what makes up each classroom, that we'll enter into that conversation again at that time.
But what's the purpose? I mean, I know that there are private schools that are all male schools or all female schools, but is there still the belief, and are there points that show it to be true that females, that girls need the all-female math class so that they're taught because they need to be taught in a different fashion, or that it would be so much better if the middle school boys weren't distracted all day by flirting or, you know, discussing the girls walking down the hall?
Well, you know, when we were having the discussion about making Beaufort the middle school, we invited a team of experts from the University of Virginia Curry School to form a panel and to discuss what's the best environment to educate the middle school child? The middle school child developmentally goes through many changes during the ages of a sixth grader through an eighth grader. Those changes cause a student to vacillate between being a young adult and also being an elementary school student. They're right there in the middle. There are many pieces of research and families who feel that the development of a male or female could best happen in a classroom in which they have peers that are just like them, same gender, where they can discuss some of those developmental issues in that environment, and they can develop stronger relationships with one another without the extra pressure of having someone from the opposite sex in that environment with them. That they can develop, they can mature physically, they can develop academically, and once they go off to high school, be much more ready emotionally to handle same-sex classrooms than they are when they're in the middle school.
Does it make it, or what was discovered during the study in terms of sending a male or a female who'd been in a gender-specific class or school and now sending them off to mix at the high school level?
Well, I think you have to do, you have to prepare for that. It's not something that happens in a vacuum. If you're going to make the decision to have same gender classes at the middle school level, there's professional development that needs to take place with teachers and support staff in that environment. But that also means that at the high school level, teachers and support staff must be ready to receive students and be aware of some of the adjustments that will have to take place once they come back together in different gender classes.
It seems like that they would need a class just on how to deal with coming together in the mixed gender. I do find that, are there other schools, public schools in the state of Virginia who've made this attempt?
I don't know any specific school divisions that have done it. I have heard several discussions across the state about the value of it and thinking about, for various reasons, having same-gender classes.
11:47 on the Wake Up Call. Our guest today, Dr. Rosa Atkins. She's the superintendent at the Charlottesville City Schools. Let me thank the backyard for allowing us to be here today. It's a UVA Corners Culinary Secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The backyard has a seasonal menu, daily specials, and a rotating list of beers on tap. The backyard now open on Sundays, serving brunch and then a pub food menu till close. You can call them for more info, 202-8215. Find them online, thebackyarduva.com. They also have a Facebook page. All right, Dr. Atkins, we're talking about the males and the females and whether or not we need a specific classes to study. How about bullying? This seems to only be a slight sidestep in terms of the topic. It's certainly a large topic here in our area due to Mr. Bell and the work that he's done. Can you talk about that and what Charlottesville, maybe problems that the school system has had and ways that have been used to prevent problems?
Rick, very recently a research study showed that classrooms, that there is a negative correlation in student achievement. Looking at bullying, classrooms and school divisions that are said to have a large percentage or large amount of bullying, the student achievement levels went down. In our school division, about 2 years ago, we came together as a community to write a grant, Safe Schools and Healthy Kids Grant, Healthy Students Grant. And that grant, a portion of that grant, was specifically geared towards helping to overcome any bullying that may be in our school division, Albemarle School Division. We have a program called Obeyous Bullying that is throughout our school division, and it is one that helps students and teachers to problem solve and to be proactive in putting strategies in place in the classrooms to avoid bullying and to avoid situations that cause students to engage in bullying.
Can you tell me what some of those strategies are?
Well, Jackson Via Elementary School is a real flagship school with being proactive with bullying.
Was it ever a school that was flagship in terms of having the problem?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't, because they started early on in addressing the problem or the potential for the problem. They have a program called Bully Knots, and it's a program in which students serve as peer counselors, that if any of their colleagues in the classroom, peers in the classroom, have issues or have concerns about bullying, that they can go to their peer counselors, they can talk about it and get sound advice. They have a stage program that they put on each year with singing, with monologues, dialogues about strategies for being kind to one another, for solving problems, with developing healthy relationships with each other as they move into their own development and their own needs for attention, for being successful in the classroom. And that's proven to be very successful at Jackson Via and has spread to our, many of our other schools also.
Here's an instant message that came in. How do you get parents to participate in such problems?
Well, our PTOs have been very strong in that, PTOs and school programs. We send home numerous communications to our families about how to make sure that your student has a healthy self-esteem. Oftentimes, bullying comes about because the student, for one reason or another, doesn't feel good about him or herself. So we help parents in knowing how to develop students, how to encourage their students, and how to make their students feel that they are worth a great deal in our school division and in our community, and that they are valued throughout our society.
I would think that bullying, I guess the initial image that pops into mind is not accurate. I think you have to realize that bullying is not gender specific. It's not race specific. It has nothing to do with socioeconomic status. But I would think that in terms of getting the parents to participate, may be more specific in terms of socioeconomic status, families that need to have multiple jobs to help get through the year. And so are those, how does the superintendent's office, the specific schools, help those parents who may not have the time or the energy to participate in solving the problem before it comes to be, or solving the problem as it's already happening?
Well, first of all, Rick, I think bullying happens at all socioeconomic levels. I think that there bullying happens when a student, for whatever reason, feels as if he or she doesn't measure up, and that they have to put someone else down on a continuous basis in order to make themselves feel good, or they feel that they just don't belong in a certain environment. Regardless of the socioeconomics of the student or their families, it's important that we communicate to all parents via our backpack mail, our email, our website, programs at the schools, at the home schools, and at our high schools and our middle schools, that we communicate to our parents that making their student feel valued and important and equipping them with problem-solving strategies is going to be the key to eradicating bullying throughout our community and our system.
But I don't have the energy. I don't have the time. I'm already working, almost two full-time jobs, and so I can't come to the PTO meeting. I just read the email or the backpack mail that came down, And I would think that just based on percentages, there must be some who fall into that category whose children, for whatever reason, are part of the bullying, whether they're giving or receiving, who have that type of family structure. And how does the administration help with that? Do you go beyond sending the mail?
You know, whether it's with bullying or any other subject matter, we go into our communities. We partner with our communities. We partner with the Boys and Girls Club. We partner with all of the support agencies that are in our community to address issues of bullying and other issues that are important in our community. We go out to the apartment complexes, to our PTOs when they're having community members, the community organizations. We are there as an administration. Our teachers, many of our teachers, will be visiting homes and knocking on doors and making themselves known to our parents and our communities as we move to opening schools. In every way, we communicate to our families that we want to be a part of what's happening in their students' life, not just when they're in our buildings, but we go out to them to take our message out to the community.
11:55 on the wake-up call. Dr. Rosa Atkins has almost made it a full 60 minutes. She's our guest today, talking about the school system in Charlottesville and schools in general. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Dr. Atkins, 3 weeks ago, we had some folks on talking about sugar in the school system and how Charlottesville, which is, I guess, is where their kids were going, needed to make some serious changes. And it wasn't just Charlottesville, because this embodied federal rules and expectations, but they were starting in Charlottesville. Can you tell me more from the administration side of things?
I think we've been engaged over the past year, a very healthy conversation, dialogue about wellness in our school division. And one of the aspects of wellness that has taken center stage is the amount of sugar that we find in our lunch menu and the amount of sugar that we allow to come into our school system. The conversation has centered around, should we allow cupcakes in our schools? How should we look at our lunch menu and determine what is an item that has the appropriate amount of sugar, and what are items that have too much sugar and should be eliminated from our menu? That dialogue has led us to multiple committee meetings that called on the support and the expertise of physicians from the University of Virginia, dietitians, community members, nurses. We have a whole host of community members who have come together to address this issue. We have developed a draft set of guidelines that will help to inform our decisions about the amount of sugar that we actually allow in our menu items in the cafeteria. The federal government has determined that we should count the amount of sugar by the weight of the item, the percentage of sugar in comparison to the weight of the item. One of the major changes that we have made is we are going to count the amount of sugar by the number of calories found in the food item. So we're right now meticulously going through each food item that we serve in our cafeteria to calculate the percentage of sugar in those food items. And there will be some items that will be eliminated from the options for lunch in our cafeteria, along with a host of other changes that we'll be making.
The cupcakes?
You can have them once a month.
Once a month. All
once
right.
a month.
I appreciate that, because I know from our conversation a few weeks ago with those guests that this was a very important topic for them and a very difficult. It's not something that you can just walk in on Monday and say, okay, they convinced me this is what we're going to do. Someone who's doing the dietary work on that and counting the calories, That's more than a full-time job, I would imagine.
It is more than a full-time job, and we have the support of the University of Virginia to help us go through this process. We started off with 35% of the calories in a food item. No more than 35% could be sugar. We have decreased that in our school division. So by the end of the first semester, 80% of the foods that we serve in our cafeteria will have 30% or less of the calories of sugar. Now, that may sound like 30% sugar, but when you look at the amount of calories, you look at what the federal guidelines are, our percentage of sugar that will be allowed in our foods is much less than federal guidelines and much less than any that you will find across this region, and I dare say across this nation. As we continue to look at the food items, we plan to gradually decrease that percentage amount also. Our approach to all of this is that you have to have a balance. Throwing out sugar is not the option. However, decreasing the sugar in a balanced approach and making sure that wellness happens throughout all aspects of wellness in our school division is the appropriate method to take or avenue to take.
Dr. Atkins, thank you so much for being here today. I think the city of Charlottesville needs to appreciate the quality of work you do.
Thank you, Rick.
I also want to take a moment to thank Joyce Hutchinson for helping me get you in here today. And maybe in the future we'll have Dr. Moran come on for her hour and talk about things.
I'm sure she will. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Bye-bye. Next week we will have sort of Ask the Attorney. We'll have three local attorneys on, call up with your question, and we'll get some free advice. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.